in regard to my mentioning that Suzanne Malik McKenna is going to be on the show soon, he said, I don't know how to podcast, and I'll probably be in church when you have Suzanne Malik McKenna on. I got to hear what she has to say. And he writes, you already know they're gutting the Department of Environment. Yeah, this is what I hear, Tom, that the city of Chicago might be losing the Department of the Environment. Who knows? I mean, it's kind of hard to say right now. I suppose I could ask the man in the studio here, because you've worked with DOE a lot, and that's Jerry Adelman, who's the president and CEO of Openlands. What do you hear?
Morning, Mike.
I know. Yeah, I don't
That's
even
an easy question for the first one.
I know. I'm sorry to sandbag you with that. You know, here you walk in. I didn't even say hello. Did you have a cup of coffee? I go, so what's going on with the Department of the Environment?
Well, I wish I could tell you with some certainty. I really don't know for sure. Mayor Emanuel said that they're going to be doing a year-long audit and to figure out kind of what the various functions are. Are they best placed within a separate department or divided up among various city agencies? So, you know, it's hard to say.
Yeah.
I think, you know, that many people feel that it's very likely that the department as such would be terminated and, again, that there'd be some new structure. But we really don't know, and I mm-hmm. guess we just need to monitor it closely. And what I've asked is that there be transparency, you know, that we really – understand what they're doing, why they're doing it, whatever it may be,
mm-hmm.
restructuring, you know, moving things around. And so many of those functions are critical. And Chicago, you know, has been seen as a national and to some extent world leader, really, in being a green city in all its forms. And so we don't want to lose that, obviously. It's part of the brand of Chicago.
Yeah. And there's always room for improvement, as I have mentioned on the show. But we don't want to backtrack.
Yeah. Now, one thing that did happen just a couple of weeks ago, which I think is very significant, is that the Nature and Wildlife Plan, which was developed in 2006 with the input of, several dozen not-for-profits and various agencies and so forth, but looking at habitat in the city, at issues related to protection, restoration, research, connecting people to nature in the city. That plan, the update was released that kind of gives a scorecard of what's accomplished, what's been accomplished, and then what needs to happen over the next 5 years. And that was released, you know, with Mayor Emanuel's blessing. You know, there's a letter from him in the front of the report. If you go to the Department of Environment website, you can find the plan there. So I think that's really important. I mean, he recognized, again, that this is something that's significant for Chicago. We're the only large city in the country that has this comprehensive, you know, kind of approach to nature in the city, to biodiversity, habitat, and connecting people to that,
well,
enriching their lives.
And that has a lot to do with you, Openlands, Chicago Wilderness, all these pieces of the puzzle we're trying to figure out. We haven't just given up and said, well, it's urban and suburban, not much you can do about it. But we're pulling all the little parts together and trying to analyze how they still operate and how they don't operate
right.
anymore because of the encroachment of humans.
And that's where the research piece is so important. And we actually had a research summit, the Nature and Wildlife Committee, at the Chicago Botanic Garden, maybe it was a year and a half or almost 2 years ago, maybe a year and a half, and brought together over 100 scientists and leaders in the field from, you know, many different sectors, but to really kind of step back and say, what don't we know about nature in the city? You know, that we've done a lot to make it difficult for critters, you know,
yeah.
and yet we're on a major flyway. There are all these wonderful resources, these open spaces that we have, our parks and boulevards and lakefront, the river. And so really kind of developed a research agenda, you know, dealing with challenges like mm-hmm. invasive species, you know, what do you do with coyotes in the city?
Well, you know, that's a really, really good point because of what our history is to take predators and wipe them out.
Yeah, yeah.
And when we find some that are coming back, maybe, you know, we need to change the way we look at that now and see if there's some kind of some kind of way we can coexist.
Yeah, you know, I have a family house in Lockport where my both sides of my family have lived for many generations, and I do a lot of gardening. I have a lot of rabbits and chipmunks, uh-huh. like, you know, whatever. However, there's a fox den down along the creek, and they had five little foxes this year. and I didn't see a rabbit or a chipmunk until recently. So I suspect maybe they've dispersed now. So again, you've got to look at all the dimensions of the balance in nature and what can we do as humans. We've changed so much. What can we do to make those relationships smoother and better for nature and for people?
Well, I think of foxes. For most people, they're kind of like deer. You wouldn't get rid of a fox. A fox,
I would
is,
hope not. Yeah,
you know. And the good thing is that a fox is a predator. And you know, talking about the different species. Several weeks ago, I had Joel Greenberg and Steve Sullivan on from the Chicago Academy of Sciences, and we talked about the passenger pigeon. And the big anniversary, centenary, I guess is what he called it. I thought it was centennial, but he said centenary. In 2014,
right.
100 years since the passenger pigeon went extinct.
What was her name in the Cincinnati Zoo? I forgot.
Martha.
Martha, that's it.
And she died on September 1st.
Wow.
1914, which was just a couple of days ago.
I remember as a kid looking at that photo in bird books, you know, and it just, it was a powerful kind of icon.
But he also, Steve Sullivan, heads Project Squirrel. And his idea is to say, you know, squirrels are a bellwether, too. They tell us the health of our environment, even though we think, you know, a lot of people think of them as rats with furry tails. they are out there being part of ecosystems.
Yep.
Just as foxes and...
And that's the key, ecosystems. And I think that's what's happened, you know, in the last, 10, 20 years in terms of thinking about nature in metropolitan context, that we've got to understand it as part of that ecosystem. And even though we as humans have done so much to alter it, there's still systems there. And what can we do to kind of get the balance back a bit and think about all the pieces as they fit into a bigger whole and not just, you know, isolated individual species?
That's Jerry Edelman. He's president and CEO of Open Lands. I'm sorry, we don't really have any time to talk about the Lakeshore Preserve because we're... Sorry about that. It's just, you know, sometimes I just kind of go with... and I'm going to delay it just one more second because we got a phone call. Put on those headsets.
All right.
We have a question from Bernie in LaPorte County. How are you doing, Bernie?
Let me just say one thing. The family tabby cat is one that does a real job on the wildlife when you let them loose outside.
Well, I got to tell you something. We've had some feral cats in our backyard in Logan Square in Chicago, and for a long time, the birds just disappeared. They weren't going to have any of it, and now the cats have kind of disappeared, and the birds have come back. And
I've got a question. And it's funny how this program is coming about, but I've been curious. You know, like when you look around and you see these white flowers that I think came from England, and you see some other flowers that have taken over and are encroaching and drowning out other things, is there people that just do a study what's missing in the eco chain?
That's a really good question. Are you talking about Queen Anne's lace by any chance?
Like, say, for instance, like here in northern Indiana, we've got these white flowers, and they just smother everything out.
Do they look like lace, or do they look like daisies?
They look like lace.
Yeah, it's probably Queen Anne's lace.
The point is, wherever they came from, what's missing over here that's not keeping them in balance? Is there people that study this?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, the Chicago area is one of the birthplaces of restoration ecology, really trying to understand how do we bring back our natural systems how do you manage and control invasive species or very aggressive native species when things are out of balance. And, you know, we were pioneers really in prairie restoration, wetland restoration, savanna, this mix of forest and trees. And so there are scientists definitely who are doing adaptive management as well as serious research on figuring out just those kinds of questions. Like Queen Anne's lace is an example. I mean, that was brought over probably in the 17th century, you know, by the early English settlers who came here. So it's been around a long time. But, you know, again, what are the challenges?
And a lot of people think of that as a wildflower.
Right, right.
It's not a native.
No.
And it has been very successful. I saw a bunch of Queen Anne's lace up at the Lakeshore Preserve the other day. So it's a great question, Bernie. And And the point is that, yeah, we are studying this, and we continue to study it and hope that we can find some answers and bring back some of the natives. I appreciate you listening, and thanks for calling.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Again, our phone number is 773-838-9278. If you got a question for Jerry Adelman, let's get to the idea of the Open Lands Lakeshore Preserve. Now, of course, you were on the show in February.
Right.
And I have to tell you, it was really fun going out there in the dead of winter. And it was right after the big snowstorm, a few days after, and so we were able to get around. There still weren't 20 inches of snow on the beach. But we did that. But it was also fun knowing that I was going to follow up on it and go out there. And now you're going to open next Saturday. And I went there the other day, and stuff is in progress. You guys are working feverishly to get that done. That, it must be a pretty intense time for you right now.
It is. I guess the operative word is feverish, you know, because we've had a pretty wet season, as you know, and that did set back our construction schedule a bit, you know, because this wonderful, extraordinary place, this over mile of Lake Michigan shoreline with the bluffs and ravines, is a focus for ecological restoration, which we've been doing now for several years.
Right.
And, of course, that's a process that goes on for quite a while. Mm-hmm. You know, there have been two burns so far, which is really critical in terms of the maintaining, you know, that ecology.
You say two burns?
Yes. Uh-huh.
All right. So you got 77 acres there. How much acreage was burned in those burns? Do you know?
I don't, but a pretty good percentage because it was Bartlett Ravine and much of the bluffs. So I couldn't give you exact acreage, maybe two-thirds or so. But anyway, so the restoration's going on and will continue, obviously. And we're learning a lot because we don't know a great deal about the Bluff Ravine ecology. It's kind of the last frontier of restoration ecology. But what we've been doing is the infrastructure, which you saw, the trails, the overlooks.
Right.
You know, and this is a major, you know, mile long, over a mile of paved trail, you know, with these overlooks and so forth. And then developing the rain gardens and beginning the restoration of prairie savanna in that upland area. So it's not going to be 100% done, but done enough that we can unveil it to the public. And we're so excited about it.
I will be really honest with you. I got asked. And Amy Collins, who's your site manager, took me on a tour the other day so I could see how you had done. I happened to run into Bob McKeer, who took me on the was with me on the tour in February. I ran into Dan Perciarello, who's what's his specific job?
Dan is a consultant. You know, formerly was with the Chicago Park District.
Right.
He's been retired. And he's been really working closely with Bob, you know, coordinating all of the capital improvements, you know, the trail and other restoration efforts there.
Right. And so he's and he's a buddy of mine. So it was love him. And it was just amazing running into these people. So I had the camera and I just interviewed Bob again and did another little video. I don't know if you've had a chance to see it, but we
I haven't.
There's
I look
on the
to
homepage
it.
Of my website, MikeNovak.net. It's a sort of a slideshow and we've embedded some video. You get to see some of the trails, see some of the stuff in project in process. There are a couple of marvelous staircases that you're constructing that are going to give people access to the ravine, Bartlett Ravine, and to the lakeshore. You have this fantastic bridge over Shank Ravine.
Isn't that amazing?
Unbelievable.
It really is, yeah.
And considering the wet spring, and when I went there and Bob and Amy in February showed me, said, here's the ravine, we're going to have a bridge over this.
And you said, right.
Yeah, exactly, I did. But it's done.
It is.
And it's got a 70-foot span in the middle of it where you left the ravine intact so you weren't sending pylons into the ravine.
I know, it was very interesting. I'm sure they explained to you how it was constructed. You know, put a couple poles down, build a little platform, and then continue that way so there's never heavy equipment down in the ravine, you know, which is really important because that would have done so much damage.
Well, as any gardener knows, the minute you start compacting your soil, you change the nature of the soil.
Totally.
And it can take years to get it back.
That's
right. And you were dealing with a ravine. Yeah, it's degraded and you still need to do restoration, but you can't make it worse at this
point. Exactly.
You cannot.
Yep, yep. Well, we've been so lucky to have Bob as our chief operating officer and as the fellow who's really been monitoring and spearheading, you know, all of the work there. You know, he's an extremely talented landscape architect and has great experience in his previous life at the Park District with large capital projects, and just a great guy, but one who brings extraordinary experience and talent and insight to this whole effort, and invaluable. And Amy was a great hire. So we've got a good team.
You have a wonderful team, and it's interesting going out there and walking along and seeing the workers and the... I'm going to ask you another hard question
here,
okay?
Hey, you started with one, so
why not?
Can it get worse? I don't know.
Because when I toured the facility last Friday, what I came away with, despite the fact that you've got ADA trails, mm-hmm. So it's accessible to children and the elderly and
people with disabilities.
People with disabilities.
Which is rare in a nature preserve setting.
Yeah. Yeah. Which meant you have to have some footprint there, you know it.
Right,
but
right, right.
I still came away with the idea that the place is so fragile. The fragility of it just almost overwhelmed me. No, because now it might be because I know the history of it a little bit, and I know the battles you've had to fight to get lands. I know the pressures on the land from adjoining businesses and residences. I know the degradation of the ravines and the fact that, you know, walking down Bartlett Ravine where you've done restoration, mm-hmm. well, you can also see where places are eroded and you're fighting like heck to just keep them from degrading further. The fragility of it just struck me, and it makes me wonder whether you have trepidation about opening this up to the public, even though it's supposed to be a public space.
We don't. I think we have a lot of confidence in the public, quite frankly, and the way it was designed... it takes into consideration the sensitive nature. For instance, those stairs, you know, there are two sets of stairs
right.
That connect the upland trail, in one case with Bartlett Ravine and the other with the John and Nancy Hamill stairs that go down to the lakefront. You know, how can you experience these bluffs? You know, you don't want people walking up there. First of all, it's very dangerous, and also mm-hmm. would be extremely destructive. And so in most cases, you never really get close to the vegetation and kind of can experience, you know, what the nature of that bluff ecology is. Well, those stairs allow you to do that. They were put in very carefully. You know, the native vegetation is being restored. So you're going to be going right through, but in a way that your footprint will not negatively impact it. The trail is just that in the upland. It's a trail, and it's paved, mm-hmm. and you know you're supposed to stay on that trail. You
right.
know? We're going to mow along the edge, and then there'll be the native prairie and savanna. Bartlett Ravine, fortunately, you know, it has a road going down it. We didn't put it in. It's been there for probably a road probably since the 1880s or 90s.
Uh-huh.
But it does provide access. And
well, you know, and Bob Bakir said in February when I was with him, in some way, it preserved that ravine.
It did. I mean, what we found about ravines is the key is getting light into them and managing water. Now, you know, buildings have been constructed close to the edge, and so we've got some challenges. We have some adjacent property owners who are working with us. We'll be putting in rain gardens and native landscaping to try to, you know, gather that water and put it down into the ground before it, you know, sheets over the bluff. So there are lots of challenges, no question, but it's a site for passive recreation, not active recreation, so we don't have swimming. We don't have beach volleyball, whatever. But people can hike, they can bicycle, they can bird watch, they can picnic. You know, it's a wonderful place to kind of get away from, you know, the hectic kind of metropolitan environment that we all live in and experience nature in a unique setting along the lake. It's the only site like it, you know, of that scale. And so I think people are going to fall in love with it. We're working with school kids, as you know. We'll have 20 classes from 3rd to 5th grade and high school doing their eco explorations this coming season from schools from Waukegan down to the city of Chicago. We have podcasts, you know, that tell stories. So there are lots of elements there that are trying to connect people to that site, its significance and its rarity. So, yeah, I think there may be some challenges here and there. Clearly, we're in an urban setting. But so far, what we've experienced with Bartlett Ravine opened is that people are very respectful and appreciative. And it's such an unusual and wonderful, you know, treasure that they seem to value it.
This is funny. I'm talking to Jerry Adelman from Openlands. He's president and CEO. We're talking about the opening of the Openlands Lakeshore Preserve. Put your headsets on for a second, Jer, because in all of this, of course, we got into the details. And I've got Chris from Palatine who has a very important question. What's the question, Chris?
Where is this and how do you get to it?
Okay, good question.
Chris, we are totally busted on this one.
Listeners that get to the point.
Yeah, hearing the great thing that sounds fantastic. I'm saying, okay, where in the heck is it?
Okay, well, I'm going to give you the easiest way to get there, and that is to go to our website, www.openlands, one word, openlands.org. And you'll find a whole section there on directions and parking and so forth. But it's in Highwood and Highland Park. It's the southern part of the former Fort Sheridan, bordered by Sheridan Road. The northern part was redeveloped in the early 90s. It's called the town of Fort Sheridan. That's the historic part of the fort. And there's approximately 250 acres there that the Lake County Forest Preserve District has, with a little less than a mile of lakefront. So this is the southern part, part of which has been redeveloped for Navy housing. And another section down the road will be developed for market rate housing. But Open Lands took title to the lakefront, the bluffs, the ravines, and it's really quite extraordinary. But again, easiest way, because there's a map and specific directions, would be go to our website.
And I'll tell you, Chris, if you can't get there, you can always go to my website because I have all the links up as well. And I've got links to Openlands and to the Lakeshore Preserve and to the directions. It's real easy to get to. They've got a map right on it that shows you just exactly where to drive and where to park.
And, Mike, if I could add that on Saturday, which is the kind of public grand opening, you know, free, open to everyone, all kinds of tours and birds of prey demonstration, art activities for kids, scavenger hunts, kite flying, light refreshments, all sorts of things. But there is a metro station, the Fort Sheridan metro station, and we're going to have shuttle service there every 15 minutes from that station from 11 to 2.
But how far north are you from Ravinia?
Oh, I mean, we're just, you know, a few miles from Ravinia.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's very close.
Right there, yeah.
Okay, great. And now, is there going to be a general admission fee normally?
Oh, no, this is open, free of charge to
always.
The public, always, every day of the year. We open at 6:30 in the morning and close at sunset. And, again, it's adjacent to the Lake County Forest Preserve at Fort Sheridan. So over 2 miles of lakefront, which is pretty amazing. Yeah.
Considering that it could have been developed and lost forever.
Right. What happened was we were approached by then Congressman Kirk, now Senator Kirk, whose district it was in. And he said we're going to be redeveloping the southern part, the non-historic part of the fort, for Navy housing, market rate housing. And would we work with him to find a public agency or not-for-profit who would take the mile of lakefront, bluffs, and ravines to make sure that it wasn't a gated community, that it would be open to the general public? And for various reasons, we weren't able to identify anyone. Everyone said it had to be saved. It didn't kind of fit their agenda at that time. We went back to him, and he told him that. He said, well, if Open Lands doesn't take it, it'll be a gated community. It'll be lost in terms of general public enjoyment. And we said, can't let that happen. You know, and even though we're an organization almost 50 years old, we will be next year, and we've purchased thousands of acres, we're interim property owners. We always pass it on to, you know, park district, forest preserve, state, public agency. And our board said, you know, we can't let that happen. This is too rare, too special. So little of the lakefront outside the city of Chicago is open to the public, and at that scale, mm-hmm. especially with this ecology, you know, mm-hmm. it's unique. So we did, and we have a capital campaign that we're still working to complete, and we have our grand opening weekend.
that's a good point. And by the way, thank you for
By the way, they only got one last statement.
Sure.
It sounds like Mark Kirk did at least one thing right.
You know what? You got to give him credit for it.
I won't give him credit for much.
You know, and here's what I would say about that, is that what we need to do now is remind Mark Kirk of the environmentalist he was in the 90s and say, you did this, we appreciate it, now you got to step up and do it as a senator as well.
Absolutely.
All right, thanks for calling, Chris. Bye-bye. And let me take one more quick one before I get back to some things that Chris brought up, and that is Jane in West Dundee. Hi, you're on the Mike Novak Show.
Oh, my God, I can't stand it. I just love your show. My family listens to it, and you need to be on longer, please. Can't they put you on longer? And you have so much wonderful information. You're just so inspiring, and more people need to hear you and listen to your words of wisdom about our world. And I just love it, and I think you need a television program, too.
I think so, too.
Okay. I'll second that. Yeah. He'd be great.
And I want Jerry Adelman to be my co-host.
Excuse me?
Wait a minute. Now you're in trouble.
You're all wonderful.
What about the Sassy
all these years
sidekick?
Of support, now you get bumped.
Right. Oh, man. That's the last time I give you a ride on a fire engine.
I got a ride on a fire engine last week, so thanks to Heather. So Heather would actually be the co-host. I think Jerry would be a permanent guest. Well, that's awfully kind, Jane. I really appreciate it.
It's not kind. You're very important to this world.
Well, listen, I think because you're so sweet, we need to send you something.
No, I don't need anything. I just want you to know. That's all. My husband wants you to know, too. So it's just wonderful. I don't need any presents. Send them to the whatever you want to send them to.
You know what I'll do?
A bunch of those catalogs.
Exactly. In your honor, I'm going to buy an extra catalog from Landreth Seed Company and give it to a friend.
Exactly. That's what I'm going to do.
All right. Fabulous. Thanks for calling, Jane.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Getting back to Chris's comment, which is very interesting, and what you brought up about the you guys taking charge of it. You're a 501c3. Are you 501c3?
501c3, yeah.
Okay.
Founded in 1963.
Right. And like you said, this is an experiment for you to actually own property.
Right.
This has got to be a little tricky, and it's a grand experiment, and it's because this property is so interesting, it's unique. It must make you a little nervous to figure out how to fold this into your mission.
Well, it clearly is a new chapter, you know, in open lands history. And, you know, we've been around, as I said, since 63. We're one of the first in the country, actually, to focus on the large metropolitan area, you know, big city, suburbs, exurban fringe. Conservation was seen as wilderness or rural areas. So we were pioneers back then, too. We did the first rail-to-trail conversion, working with community groups, the Illinois Prairie Path, the first heritage area, the I&M Canal, on and on. A lot of firsts that we've done. The Madewin National Tallgrass Prairie that we provided the critical leadership for and so
Love
forth.
Love Madewin. Yes, what a great place.
Extraordinary place.
You know, and that's the other thing. You don't do things in a small way.
We don't. Well, we do small and large. I guess we see how this region is a web of green that's connected. And it goes from inner city neighborhoods with, you know, small-scale community parks and gardens and green spaces all the way to a 19,000-acre Madewin tallgrass prairie.
Not to mention things like tree keepers.
Hey, 20th anniversary coming up.
Which number are you?
417, mm-hmm. Reporting for duty.
There you go.
And I know you're honoring them this year at your luncheon.
We are.
Tree keepers, but the 20th anniversary is next year, right?
It's actually this year.
It is this year.
It's this year,
that's
yeah.
Right. Yeah, because there's going to be a gathering of tree keepers this month, when I think when I'm out of town, which is makes
too
me
bad.
Unhappy.
Yeah. Yeah, we're trying to have a reunion of all the tree keepers, as many as we can.
But I'm hoping that the Care Trees will invite me to their table.
For the luncheon.
And
well,
for
we
the
hope
luncheon,
so, too.
So I could be there, too.
good. Anyway, back to sort of, so we've done a lot of firsts. We've been pioneers. And always connecting people to the land at these different scales. So again, this is a first because we've purchased, you know, land all over the region. We've done a lot of ecological restoration, but we haven't owned in perpetuity any of these sites. You know, we're interim property holders. So this is a departure. But what we found is that it's actually enriched our work because it gives us a lot of insight into the challenges of restoration and management. interpretation, educational programs, you know, firsthand. We're in the front lines doing it. We see it as a learning landscape, so we want to share our experience with scientists and property managers and, you know, people involved in environmental education and so forth. I think we're up for it. You know, it's been an interesting journey. It's not over. It's really just beginning. But I'm confident that it will be an extraordinary new treasure, you know, added to this wonderful set of things that are available in Northern Illinois for the general public, and that we're going to continue to partner with some wonderful organizations like the Chicago Botanic Garden that's helping us with monitoring. You know, is this restoration working? You know, what are the insights learned? Working with the Lake County Forest Preserve District adjacent to us, you know, with Highland Park and Highwood and, you know, Audubon, so many others who are kind of coming to partner with us to make this site, you know, the best it can be, and for all of us to learn and share those experiences with others.
And I have to tell you, I love Amy. She's wonderful. I love Bob. He's every time I stick a camera in his face, he just starts talking.
He's a natural.
He is. You know, and all the folks that have worked so hard on it, they must be very excited about this opening next Saturday.
I think we're excited. We're nervous. You were talking about the weather earlier. You know, what kind of weekend are we going to have? Keep your fingers crossed.
But you know, and I think I started to say this, and I got sidetracked, as I always do on this show. Amy said to me, you know, we might not have everything exactly finished. And Bob was saying, you know, everything might not be exactly finished. You think people are going to mind? I said, heck no. Are you kidding? The thing is so spectacular. If you don't have every T crossed and I dotted, nobody's going to care next Saturday.
I'm with you. Absolutely. And it is a work in progress, and it will be. But so much has been accomplished and to share and allows people to experience this amazing landscape and those views and just the natural beauty. And, of course, migration, you know, we're approaching it, and the birds there. We've identified already over 150 species of birds on the site. I suspect many more over time. So it is just a very unique and special place for a Chicago area person to experience.
And I think before we go, two things. First, I cannot emphasize enough how unique this ecosystem is and how lucky – not lucky – I guess we're lucky that it got preserved by the military, of all things.
Right.
The fact that it was there and did not get turned into condos is remarkable. And private beaches, as you said, it could have been a gated community. And then fortunate that we have organizations in Chicago like Open Lands and some of the others that you mentioned that stood up and said, we've got to make this happen because this would have been gone forever. We would never have known. And one of the things Amy was telling me about is now the work is on. You've done some restoration, but you still have a lot to do, and that's going to take place over years of time. Even just trying to figure out which plants are supposed to go there that have disappeared.
Because we know a lot now about prairies and prairie restoration and wetland and savanna and forest. Virtually nothing about these ravines. There have been interventions, you know, dealing with erosion and kind of problems. Lake County Forest Preserve has done restoration on two of their ravines, but, you know, it was early and we're still learning a great deal. So I would say Bartlett Ravine is probably the most focused and serious restoration ever undertaken in Illinois of one of these ravines.
And, well, there's so few of those ravines.
Right. I mean, there are only 30, 35 of them along the lake. Most of them are in private ownership with homes along them. A few have small parks, but they're very small and they're local and not really open to the general public. And so when you think of Illinois with our lakefront, we have about 60 miles. Approximately half is in the city of Chicago. Most of that is open to the public. It's wonderful. It's great recreational opportunity and just scenic beauty. But it's landfill, you know, important as habitat. Nevertheless, a lot of the restoration or recreation work that's happened, you know, to create friendlier environments, especially for birds, is critical. But up here, we're talking about a native landscape that was rare in the first place and that can only be experienced at that scale at our site and with our neighbor at Lake County Forest Preserve, the former Fort Sheridan, in its totality. You go further north, you've got Illinois Beach. That's spectacular, heavily visited. But it's like Indiana Dunes. It's dune swale, whole different you know, ecology and topography and so forth.
You know,
forth.
It's interesting. I was talking to Amy. I said, well, you must be doing a lot of reading from the chronicles of early settlers to see what kind of plants were here. And she said, they're really not very helpful.
Wasn't
a lot written about the flora at that time. And she said by the time people did write in the 1890s, in that general time frame, she said the land had already been degraded. It's kind of hard to know what was there originally.
You know, and we historically kind of have seen the ravines as places to put stuff you want to get rid of, landfill, throw your leaves there in the fall, whatever, you know, out of sight, out of mind. People haven't really studied them and appreciated them as they should over the years. And so many have been severely abused. The watersheds in which they exist, you know, have been overly developed. So there are all sorts of issues that we experience on site, but that other you know, units of government and private property owners who have ravines are dealing with as well. And so, again, we see it as a learning landscape. I guess open lands, you know, was interested in for a number of reasons. One was the rare ecology and the opportunity to restore it, understand it, get insights into its sustainability. But then public access. I mean, you know, a mile of lakefront with this rare ecology, with bluffs in some cases that are 70 feet above the lake. I mean, wow. You know, it's just
the views. And
then the educational opportunities on all these levels. I mean, for school kids developing these programs that are very focused, tied to curriculum, but also just for the general public coming, but also for the scientific community and the land manager community to get insight into what works, what doesn't work, what kind of adaptive management do we need to, you know, undertake over time? So it's got so many dimensions to it that open lands just couldn't say no. We said, we got to do this. You know, it's too important.
Well, let's take one more phone call before I let you go, and that's Marilyn in Skokie. Hi, Marilyn. You're on the Mike Novak Show.
Hi. It's nice to be here, and thank you very much for putting on this wonderful information about the lakeshore. One of the things that I wanted to say was that I was actually at the ribbon cutting dedication and took some photos. This was back in September 13th of 2009. So I got kind of a sneak peek at what was going on there. And I would say, don't worry about it not being finished. Nothing had been done at that time. And I found it completely breathtaking. I took a number of pictures, put them on my Facebook page, and I've had commenters as far away as England saying how beautiful it was. So I would really encourage everybody to get out there. I know I'll be going again to see what you've done in the interim.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for being such a great ambassador for us.
And go ahead.
No, it's my pleasure. Please, you go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, Marilyn, that you'll like it even more because what they've augmented this with, and it's not to take away from the natural beauty, but that bridge over the ravine is stunning, and the stairways are beautiful, and they have their own kind of beauty. And the fact that you could bring something in like that enhances the park and not take away from it is just wonderful.
Well, I'm really looking forward to walking up and down on those stairs and going to see the crystal clear water that was there before. So, again, thank you so much, Open Lands, for taking on this new challenge. I've been a big supporter of yours for a long time, and this new chapter is just what you needed.
Well, we appreciate all your great support. Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Marilyn. Appreciate
it. Sure.
Mike, if there's one thing I could mention, too, in terms of experiencing this place, and that's the public art, which I hope you got a chance to see.
Oh, my goodness. We almost missed that. Art and nature here
is just extraordinary. And it's not a sculpture park.
No.
But we did a competition, and artists submitted proposals. And the whole idea of creating discrete works that give point of entry, that connect people to the themes and the issues, and we're really excited about it. Subtle, but really quite wonderful. The color poles, you know, the blues and grays along the lake to show you what the colors are during the year. There'll be a podcast that kind of talks about that.
I actually have a photo of that art piece on the slideshow on my homepage. And I also have the other one, one of the other ones, which is a driftwood sculpture called Erode.
Right, by Vivian Visser.
Yes.
And again, kind of talking again about the movement of water, the critical nature of that in terms of sustaining, you know, these systems and so forth. Did you see the Soil is Alive, the piece that Sharon
I have a photo of that on the website, too.
And oh,
it's
good.
Oh, yeah.
I just love that, because you don't think of soil. We take it for granted. Now, you think of it all the time.
Unfortunately,
in your program,
yes.
But most people don't. And, you know, you have a handful of soil, and you might have as many little microbes in there as you have people on the face of the earth. Sharon worked with scientists and really figured out what kind of microbial life, microorganisms would exist in the soil here. And she selected some and did these marvelous bronze reliefs bronze colored. They really aren't bronze. Mm-hmm. And are embedded in the retaining wall there. But just to really, you know, bring that dimension of sustainability alive, the critical nature of soil, and that it is very much alive and has a whole set of dynamic organisms, you know, that we never imagine because they're microscopic and you don't see them.
And I'm so glad you brought up the art. I almost missed it, and that would have been terrible, because it's one of those little several grace notes in the preserve, because you turn a corner and suddenly you've got this beautiful art, and there's the mural under the
mural's breathtaking, isn't it?
The mural's fabulous, and you have to walk down Bartlett Ravine to see the mural.
And now there's stairs going down that I think will be completed. They weren't when I was there a few days ago. There was almost.
Well, the picture I have up on my website shows them in progress.
Oh, great, great.
And finally, last but not least, people can still contribute.
Absolutely.
To this, because you're still trying to raise funds.
We are. We've been very fortunate. We had a wonderful grant from the Grand Victoria Foundation for $4 million, which really jump-started this, and also the Hamill Family Foundation for $2 million. Just extraordinary. We've never undertaken a capital campaign like this before. We're now up to about $10.3 million. Our goal is 12 or more. And you know, so we have naming opportunities. That beautiful bridge you mentioned is not named and could be.
So, at
all levels, large and small, we welcome contributions.
I think
and
you
would
ought
be
to, go
happy
to go to Stephen Colbert.
Hey.
I mean, it sounds like the kind of thing that he'd love to have named after him.
Not a bad idea. I like that.
He's got the pack, you know.
Hey, yeah. Well, hey, keep thinking. That's a good suggestion.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
Yeah.
And you can do that. I've got all the, you can go to Openlands to find out about that, but I've also have that information on my website, mikenovak.net, on this week's show. You can write to Director of Development, Jennifer Mullman, and I've got her email address or the phone number. You just pick up the phone and say, hey, I want to contribute to the Openlands Lakeshore Preserve, and they'll say, yeah, sure.
And Mike, gifts at all scales, you know, even though, you know, we're looking for those big naming opportunities, you know, a $25 contribution helps too.
All right. Listen, Jerry Adelman, always a pleasure to have you here. You know, Bob and Amy were afraid you wouldn't have anything to say and that I was.
Well, I'm usually kind of timid.
Yeah. But you filled things out well. I appreciate it, because I didn't have anything going on the show today.
And you're always so reticent too.
Yeah, me too. But no, it's pleasure. And I heartily advise everyone, go out and see the preserve. Grand opening next week, but it's open now into the future, and it's free and open to the public, and it's accessible, and the kids are going to love it, and they're going to learn something about nature that they didn't know existed. I had a friend of mine come with me who lives in Wilmette and said, I had no idea this was here. No idea at all.
And, of course, officially it was off limits for over 100 years. You know, it was a military base.
Yeah. And that's what people will say. I had no idea this exists. All right. Thanks again, Jerry.
Mike, thank you.
We will talk real soon.